Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the reason for the season. The reason why we wake up in the morning. The reason why so many Aztec warriors ripped hearts out and chewed on them. The reason why my mother left my father when I was 20 and not earlier. And it's because greatness has been thrust upon you. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. We're diving into the first episode of the Fairly Odd Fairy Tales. Whee! Now, I know that's the noise you guys are making at home, but just know you don't have to make it for the rest of this show because I'll be making them at least every 10 minutes. That being said, we're going to start with introducing the two stud muffins that I have sitting in front of me. Yeah, that's you guys. Do one of you guys want to introduce yourselves, or should I introduce you?
Hola, ladies and gentlemen. This is Julian Breyer here, guest on this first Fairly Odd Fairy Tales. Came up with the name, so I feel proud of that one.
Let's go ahead and just clear the air real quick. Julian Fat Booty Breyer actually is one of the inspirations for this show because I saw his ass one time and I was like, damn, that booty's so fat, I should write a story about it and tell my children before they go to sleep. Yeah. And that's where this actually came from.
My asshole do that to people every once in a while. I keep it tight.
How tight?
Squats.
I can't see through that.
I mean, that's what happens. I'll let you in if you need to be let in at some point.
All right, Julian, you're done. All right, our next guest on the show, the true guest, not the one who's calling himself a guest when he's really a host of the show, he just doesn't know yet, our true guest, and actually a lover to my mother, Owen Landsberg.
Yeah. Hey, what's going on, guys?
Yeah. Owen, why don't you go ahead and, you know what, tell us one fun fact about you that might not be true.
Your mom loves it when I spit in her mouth.
I said might not.
Oh, sorry. Your sister loves it when I spit in her mouth?
Yeah, we could go both ways on my sister. We're really not sure.
I don't want to go both ways on your sister with you.
Not with me.
No, just I thought you were putting it out there. I just want to, you know, shut that down real quick.
Yo, look, dude. Somebody's got to hold this camera, and your fingers are way too wobbly for the job. So hey, you buddy. Just go to town on my sister, and I'll take let Papa take
care
of it.
I'm like a little dog chasing cars. I don't know what to do if I catch one.
Bonzo, sit. No, bad Bonzo. Bonzo's the name of my sister. All right, guys. Well, now that you know who's going to be on the show with us, let's go ahead and just dive in. So basically, what you guys are in for is a tale of woe, despair, and a happy ending. And that happy ending is Julian's sweet ass. And so I want to start with letting you guys know this show is in theory, it's going to be a dive back into your childhood as an adult for you to relive and recreate these beautiful memories you have of these stories that probably led to you developing into the adult that you are today. And in that time, I'm going to do my best to not only connect these fairy tales that you might have heard as a child to your everyday normal life as an adult now, but maybe to a historical relevance that might be able to give you a grasp on where humanity was at the time that story was written. And I'm going to get shit-faced the whole time. Or wait, can I say that? Yeah, I think I can say that. I'm going to get shit-faced.
Hey, buddy, it's your podcast. You can do whatever you want.
That was for Jesus.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, Jesus was a drunkard, kind of.
Well, at the very least, he was the best mixologist. And that's another aspect we're going to introduce in this show. Now, thankfully, tonight, what we're going to be drinking on is a rye Woodford Reserve that we turned into these delicious old fashions that we also had the help of a young lady named, what was her first name?
Holly Tripp.
That is a long first name, and boy oh boy does it show in every single one of these drinks. Now, thank you, Holly, for going ahead and putting together these wonderful old fashions. We used a Angostura bitters. We had just a regular simple syrup, that Woodford Reserve rye, little ice, and the most important touch, I think, she went ahead and brought out this like creme brulee torch, and she torched our oils of our oranges before she put those little chips into our drinks. And I really do think it does evolve that citrus flavor, just a little bit more. It like caramelizes it briefly.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, and definitely comes through. And also, at any point, if anybody wants to throw in a new recipe, shut the fuck up.
Well, I'll start with asking for that whiskey to come over here real quick because I finished that first old fashioned already.
Oh, that's right. You only had one. Malaku and I are on number two.
I actually went back in and put a little bit more afterwards.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, now that we've gotten through the cheap stuff, let's talk about the real pearl of fucking excellence. Tonight, we are going to be discussing the story of Young Rapunzel. Now, the reason why I specified Young Rapunzel is because, which is true in all fairy tales, nobody gives a shit once you're older. Once you've gotten your happy ending, for all we care, you could have fucking died of cancer, which is unfortunate. Somebody should really finish these fairy tales. What happens to Rapunzel after she ends up with her Prince Charming? I don't know, but that's not what I'm supposed to talk about right now. I'm supposed to talk about how she led up to this Prince Charming. Now, Julian, how much do you know about Rapunzel?
Very little, except for the fact that she had long hair, was trapped in a tower, and her name has something to do with parsley.
All right, cool.
That's all I got.
I mean, unfortunately for me, you fucking summed up the whole story, goddammit. Well, what about you, Owen? How much of you of
this story? I just know about a horse named Maximus that I really like in that story.
Seems like you're not the only person who's going to learn something tonight.
Right. No, I mean, honestly, jokingly aside, I do love the movie Tangled. I think it's fucking hilarious. But to be honest, with the true story of Rapunzel, I don't know a whole lot. So I'm excited to learn on this.
All right. Well, that's exciting because I spent way too much fucking time reading so many different iterations of this story only to realize Rapunzel might not actually be the story you thought it was originally. And on top of that, the version that you're hearing that Julian brought up briefly, which is the most iconic, I think, which is the Rapunzel, Rapunzel, let down your long hair. That version actually was inspired by a slightly different German version that was written right before the Grimms decided to collect all of these fairy tales into an anthology. Now, for those of you who don't know who the Grimms are, what I would seriously urge is that you take a moment to go into your bedroom, set it on fire, destroy everything you've ever had, because you need to restructure your entire fucking life right now. Because these people might be the reason
why. Are you trying to say that the catalyst for a good life is knowing and reading the Grimm's Brothers fairy tales?
No, I would say it's more of a milestone of success.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. Before we get into this fairy tale, I have a question for you.
I think I have an answer. Rapunzel.
What color was her hair? Do you actually know, like, truly? Because I know it's supposed to be blonde. But before we get into this, and I'm asking that question because I want to set the mood here in the room. I want to change the lights to match her hair color.
So her hair was actually, it's two different colors. They're both reminiscent of blonde, but they're not blonde. It was bronze and it was gold. These were the two colors they've associated her hair with.
All right, now it's feeling golden here.
Oh, I only got one light working apparently for all the light bulbs in this room. Here we go. All right, sweet. I just want to, you know, set the mood right. I mean, I know for the listeners at home, this ain't going to matter to you, but for us.
It's a big deal.
It is.
Yeah. Without the right color, I wouldn't know.
I wouldn't be bathed in the bronze golden light of Rapunzel's hair.
Look, guys, I was trying to do something PG, but now Daddy's rocking a half chub. And I don't know what to do with it because there's two cameras on me, and I'm scared to stand up. So I'm going to do what I did in church.
Oh, no, I saw the table rise about 3 inches.
That's the ghost. If you think Daddy can sport 3 inches, you're a generous man. I'll tell you that right now.
So out of curiosity, is the blonde, or rather golden or bronze hair, is that specifically in the German telling of the story, or are there other versions where maybe she has a different color?
It's definitely a different version. So in one of the versions of the German story, they don't even talk necessarily about what color her hair is. They kind of just like skip past that.
Yeah, we can assume it's blonde because they're German. So yes. It's reasonable guess.
Well, I wouldn't assume that it was blonde because they were German. I would assume they hoped it's blonde.
Sorry, I'm just over here making sounds. I'm like, there's so many things. I'm like, huh?
Well, look, guys. I know you came to this podcast for historical accuracy, and I'm going to tell you right now, for the first 30 minutes of this episode, you're not going to get that. What you're going to get is somebody retelling in the best way they could find how they felt. It's more of a reflection of my mindset. But at the end, I will make sure to try my best to do a fact check. I'll make sure to go over anything that could have been just silly nonsense if there is an actual answer I have for you. And then I will do my best to create some kind of bibliography so you could see at least where I got this information from. So if I start saying, hey, in this version, these people thought she had gold hair, it's probably because these people played with gold a little bit too much for the normal person's fancy. But that will be dependent entirely on the information and where I got it from. I don't think anyone here besides myself should be held accountable because no one else knows about this story but me. In fact, I wrote this story back in, let's see what year, 1812. So I wrote this story in 1812. My God, I need a denser calendar. But so let's go ahead and just restart.
Are you trying to say you're 210 years old?
At least.
No wonder why you look that bad.
I thought it was my leathery bronze skin that burned me down. Ladies and gentlemen, call me Rapunzel. Now, for those of you who don't know what Rapunzel means, as far as the most modern day translations and translators could figure out,
In German, it means let down your hair, right?
In German, it means something way harsher than let down your hair. But that's just because I don't speak German, so I make up every German translation I've ever come into account with.
Sie sprechen Sie Deutsch?
Look, sir, this is America. And in America, we speak American. And I don't know what color American is, but I know one thing. Sie sprechen Sie Deutsch, sir. Now, Rapunzel, for those of you who don't know, which I think is an interesting tidbit of information, it's a translation of a modern green. And by green, I mean some kind of green leaf vegetable. Now, they don't know exactly which green leaf vegetable it was. There's actually three different kinds of green leaf vegetables. They think it was either a kind of lettuce, mm-hmm. a kind of herb, or a kind of herb that was specifically parsley.
Yeah, okay, like what you were saying earlier, mm-hmm. Jules. Yeah, it's do you mind if I call you Jules?
Or you call me whatever you need to call me.
Can I call you by my name?
Yep, absolutely.
Call me by your name? I don't know.
No, I'll go with Owen.
Okay, cool, yeah. Sweet, yeah. So Owen, weren't you saying that earlier?
I forgot exactly what the name was, but in the French telling of the story, because I'm French, my mother used to tell me sometimes something about this story, and I remember her name being something close to parsley in French, so that's kind of where I learned it from. And then this kid over here, Mr. Malaku, got me back into it. So
when it comes to the French version, I guess specifically to tap onto what Julian was saying, there is a French iteration of this story, but that name was Personette, which does translate, I'm pretty sure, to parsley. Now, this will all make sense.
Parsnips. I mean, I immediately went to parsnips on it, though.
Parsnips?
Yeah.
Sir, it is 2021. When's the last time anybody used parsnips?
Oh, all the time. Dude, if you make a stock with parsnips, it's nice and earthy. Mm.
You fool.
Yeah.
I can't believe you didn't think about the stock
with
the
parsnips. Aren't you a chef? Shouldn't you know parsnips are great in stocks?
So I was about to actually make a remark like, hey guys, look, this is a podcast about fairy tales, not about cooking. How dare you challenge my cooking? And then I realized I am a chef. Shit. Yeah. You know what, guys? Come to my food truck. Check it out. And if you feel like there's a lack of parsnips, then that comment will be historically relevant. Up until then, parsnips are stupid. And how dare you?
But parsnips are a root vegetable, right? Not a leafy green.
You're asking so many questions that I should know the answer to. Yes. But like, I didn't realize somebody would throw out some bullshit vegetable in my court and I was going to have to sit here and use it in my stock.
First of all, parsnip isn't bullshit vegetable like cucumber is.
Okay, wait. It seems like you don't know that cucumber is a fruit and somebody should go ahead and educate you on them seeds.
Wait.
Yep.
Cucumber is a fruit?
Cucumber is a fruit. In fact, a lot of the things that you might think are vegetables are in fact fruits.
Okay, well, I knew tomatoes. Like, I consider tomato a fruit.
Oh, squash is a fruit.
Oh, I knew squash. Oh, my God.
You know what's the really, really arrogant point that was just made? Yeah. Me? I consider tomato a fruit. Well, sir, unfortunately for you, it doesn't matter what you consider tomato. It's still what it is. And I will say right now, that tomatoes actually are really good with shakshuka. And if you've never used tomatoes in your shakshuka, you weren't making shakshuka. And that's something I learned very recently when I was studying about Rapunzel and making shakshuka at the same time. So there is a connection everywhere. Yeah. And so basically what I'm going to go ahead and do with this story, for those of you who are still listening even after all of this, is I'm going to tell you, in theory, the first and most prominent, so it has to be both of those things, the first and most prominent version of this story, the story that held the most impact, the one that inspired other people to either collect this story or recreate it in their own way. And I'm going to tell that to you. Then we're going to tell you the actual story itself and go on about it. And by the end, if I've gotten drunk enough, I'll be able to bullshit some way for this to make sense with the way our world is working today. And how all of these stories that we used to listen to as children actually influenced our lives. And on top of that, influenced the lives of people before us. And why there might be some themes that we don't necessarily understand about humans that humans already kind of figured out for themselves. And they implicated those themes into these stories, kind of like a parable. And I find that word to be one of the most interesting ways to relate this kind of connection, because what a parable does is it gives you a way to understand a point you might not be able to understand in a relevant way so that you can associate yourself with the understanding. And I think that's really important to getting down to the bottom of a lot of these fairy tales, frankly, because all of these fairy tales are really, in my opinion, just a reflection on the time of that place. And it's like, think of it as a journal entry that generations had time to spice up as time went on. So when it comes to Rapunzel, we have two versions, weirdly enough, and I didn't pick this story to be the first episode for this reason. It just fell into my lap. So there's two versions of it that were equally as prominent and very different from each other, but they both led to what is the modern day Rapunzel. And I think the best version of the modern day Rapunzel was done by Disney in their film Tangled.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah, because they took all of the major literary themes, and they fluffed them up with their Pixar magic. But it was as true as it could have been as a Disney movie to the Grimm's Brothers version. But let's go ahead and dive in. So one of those versions, of course, which will probably be the theme for most of our fucking episodes, is the Grimm Brothers. Now, these two brothers, if you haven't taken the time to figure out who they were, we will go ahead and dive down in a future episode. We'll even dedicate a whole episode to them because they came from an interesting background. They were poor children who came from a family of many kids, and their father and their grandfather both fall ill, and the idea of them being like the household leaders was instilled in them at a very young age, like at 11 and 14. And these two brothers worked tediously to take care of their family. And so the whole idea of being fairy tale owners, that didn't even come until they were, I think, in their late 20s, early 30s.
Which is, at that time, would be like your 90s these days.
You're
like
just about at the end of your life at that point.
You're lucky to have lived to the end of your 20s or 30s.
So wait, just out of curiosity, what roughly is the time period they lived in, 1800s or
1700s? It's 1700s to 1800s. Also, at that, I just want to go ahead and clarify something. At that time period, being 30 did not mean you were 90. Being 30 meant you were 30. But the only issue is that most people, because they were dying of like weird diseases, if you were
poor, not saying you, when you were 30 you looked like today 90, but it's like you were pretty much already like on like the end of your life.
See, but not necessarily. That was actually more people who found themselves in certain jobs and fields that today, yes, you're right. If you were working that same field, you would die at an early age. Your life basically was set to die at like 40. So if you were a baker in this like post or even like current Victorian era age, yes. But because they were scholars, most scholars did not follow that same unhealthy habit of life. And at the time, it was very common for scholars to be 60, 70. Like, that was a very normal
thing. So the exception makes the rule, right? We're talking like 80, 90% of people were probably going to die in their late 20s or in their 30s. You're talking the exception here. Like, yes, scholars for sure are going to live a lot longer.
Yes. And I think actually, yeah, you are onto something in the sense of like, you're right. You're 100% right. Most of their friends probably, and their families, frankly, were going at that age. But thankfully for them, because they followed in their father's footsteps, they followed that scholar lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And because of that, it just led them away from probably things that would have been more dangerous in that time. They based most of their time reading. And if you were anybody who had the accessibility to read, because they were very poor, if they didn't strive to be as successful as they were in their historical and even law backgrounds, they probably would have died at an early age. Yeah. And I think they exemplify that in their stories a lot. Like, they changed certain stories to fit realistic themes of the times. So, for example, if you were in a place where there was famine, they would write into that story that you would either, you know, abandon your kids because of that famine. You would kill your kids even.
Oh, yeah.
Because of that. But they wouldn't add that in unnecessarily. So it was all relevant to, like, what kind of life you lived. But the Grimm's brothers are a whole another rabbit hole. Now, Rapunzel wasn't actually directly a Grimm's brother tale. It has had its multitudes of versions. And it was a man who wrote a story called... It was originally called Padukki, which is the grossest name for a fucking story.
Wait, Padukki?
Padukki? Padukki, a German folktale named Padukki. They changed it to Cherry the Frog Bride because that made a lot more sense.
It's also not any prettier, to be honest. Cherry the Frog Bride.
You know what? I think I enjoy the dressed up name of Cherry the Frog Bride more than I like Padukki.
I actually agree with them.
Yeah, because Padukki sounds like a more podunk version of Kentucky, which I didn't think was possible.
You know, I know Padussy, but that's also
Julian,
that's a whole other.
You know what? We're gonna leave our jailbird terms for another episode, and in that episode, we'll also teach you how to make a break. But
we should probably get into the actual fairy tale.
Let's do it.
Diving in. Now, I know most of you guys are like, hey, dude, Rapunzel, Grimm's brother, let down your long hair, Shrek. I know the story. Did you know that Rapunzel was actually a conflict of modern day, or I guess not modern day, at the time, of Christianity's evolution amongst the living world at the time when the world was set to be believing in almost mythological gods, which is an interesting thing because we put the Greek and Roman era of theology in this myth kind of blanket. But for them, that was just religion. That was the closest thing they had to religion. And Rapunzel was actually a revolution religiously against a norm that it was the closest act of defiance that somebody could have at the time. And it's because we keep holding on to these weird themes of like, let down your hair. It's not about the hair. It's about the thieving bitch who stole fucking parsley from somebody whose garden shouldn't have been touched. Now, I know that sounds weird to you, but it doesn't sound weird to the witch who had to deal with this.
Rapunzel's a criminal?
Is Rapunzel a criminal? I think we're about to answer that question. Now, back in the 3rd AD, there was a young lady whose name was Barbara. Now, Barbara should have done two things. One, change her fucking name, because that's not a good name.
Wait, 3rd AD? So are we talking like the 200s?
We're talking 200s, or baby.
Or 400s. 400s, sorry, 400s.
20th.
Yeah.
We're talking 400 AD,
baby. Barbara
was
a name in the 400s?
Frankly, Barbara shouldn't have been a name in any century, but yes, it was a name in the AD. And now there was this man.
Excluding Barbara Walters.
You know?
Even Barbara Walters.
We could include Barbara Walters, and I still think it would be fair. But the real issue here is that Barbara was the daughter of a merchant. Now, I don't know how much you guys know about, I guess, the mercantile skill and how deeply respected that was up until, I guess, probably free market worlds. But if you were a merchant, you were of the highest nobility, theoretically, for the working class. You were the nobles of the working class.
I was getting a little confused. I was like, oh, no, I'm picking up what you're laying down.
Yeah, like upper middle class, right? Yeah. And so being a daughter of a merchant meant that you were basically the daughter of a celebrity, and you had to do your best to not disrespect the household or the name.
Interesting.
Yeah. So Saint Senorita Barbara, I'm going to give her a prefix of Latin descent, because I think Barbara is way sexier than Barbara. So Senorita Barbara was the daughter of a man named Dioscorus. I might be pronouncing that incorrectly, but hey, dude, I'm black and Mexican. Deal with it. And so Dioscorus was a very wealthy merchant who was trying his best to keep up with whatever the other merchants were doing. Because at that time, if you did anything against the grain, they would shut down your business. And now you no longer held that celebrity status. You had no reason for importance. And he was just a man who just, you know, he boned a lady. And that lady, she with consent, like they both were down. And then they went, you know what? Let's have a kid. So they had a kid, or they were in the process of having that kid. And now I don't know if this is true for women, because I'm not a woman. And I would never say what was true for women without being a woman. But she got a little hangry during her pregnancy. And she started feeling these weird, ravenous desires for certain foods, so particular that she was like, you know what? I only want to eat this one thing. I want to eat parsley, and nothing but parsley. And if you give me anything other than parsley, I would rather wilt away and die than eat this parsley, which is pretty extreme. And her husband was like, babe, we don't have parsley. She was like, well, you know what? Then you're not going to have this kid. And so this guy's like, fuck, I got to figure out how to get some parsley. So this man looks next door and he sees this giant wall. And he's like, I bet there's some parsley on the other side of this wall. So the man climbed the wall and he looks over and he sees some parsley. And he fucking steals it. And he feeds it to his wife. And his wife is like, Jesus, that was delicious. I swear to God, I will never eat anything other than parsley as long as I live, because the Lord blessed me with parsley. Now, this creates an issue, because his source for this parsley was somebody else's garden. So he has to, every single time to acquire this parsley, break into somebody's house. So this man jumps in, a little B&E, and he fucking takes the parsley again. He starts scaling the wall again. And this lady sees him and she goes, hey, stop. That's my parsley. And this guy looks at her and he goes, look, ma'am, I respect you. I respect your garden. I respect your vegetables and your attention to detail. However, my wife is going to have a baby right now, and she only eats parsley. And the witch looks at him and goes, fuck, that's fair. And so she says, how about we make a deal? We'll trade, right? And so this guy's like, you know what? Fuck it. What do you want? Everything's on the table. She goes, everything? He goes, everything. She goes, I want your firstborn child. And without like thinking, this man goes, deal? I don't give a fuck. My child's not going to be born for at least another 6 months, and my wife is angry and hungry right now. So what this man does is he goes out of his way to just convince her she'll get the child. He's like, I promise, I swear, you can have it. I don't even fucking care about this kid. It's not really my kid. I'm just a step-in father. Doesn't matter. Don't worry about it. And she goes, fine, deal. So now they take this kid, or they make the transaction for the kid. And the guy goes back to his wife, gives her the parsley. She eats a dope-ass salad. And they move on. And I think this is like one of the first hiccups in the story. So they move on. She is fed. She has her parsley. And then no longer desires it ever again, even though it was so imperative to have it the first time. And she would not keep living without it the first time. She agrees after this second time, that's fine. We're going to move on. And that's where Rapunzel gets her name. In almost every version of this story, once the parsley has been taken from the witch, Rapunzel has now been doomed with the name of her mother's like most carnal desire. And I wonder if that's like an ironic slap in the face to the mom and the dad. Like, hey, dude, You fucking, it, like, what if I literally went up to the cops and they were about to arrest me and I went, look, officer, I know you want to arrest me. I've been doing drugs all night, but I'm about to have a baby. And they went, that's fine. I want your first baby. I'll let you go free. And you're like, all right, officer, deal. And they name your daughter Crystal Methamphetamine. You'd be like, that's pretty fucking weird, right? That's a slap in the face.
But I mean, so you were saying earlier, this is interesting. So I'm thinking about it, like, parsley is one of my favorite herbs.
Is this true?
No, for me, 100%. I fucking love parsley. I'm one of those people that cilantro actually tastes like soap to me.
Mm, so we're going to have trouble being friends.
No, I still like cilantro. I just don't, like, if you put it in something, it's fine. But I'm not, like, going to sit there and eat it. But I fucking love parsley. So when you said earlier, Malak, about Tangled, though, Tangled's about, like, the whole entire, that, like, single flower that, like, gives the life and stuff like that, which is really interesting, where it kind of plays into it, where it's like instead of a flower, they do an herb. So when you're saying, like, it's an actual close representation of the original story, they just kind of tweaked a few things like that.
They did tweak a few things like that, but also what Tangled did was it somehow managed to maintain the more visceral parts of this original St. Barbara version that the Grimm's brother leaves out. Now, the Grimm's brothers do this for a reason. They held a close relationship with motherhood because their mother was very sickly. And again, we'll dive deeper into this in another episode. But because they love their mother so much, there's certain themes of motherhood that they go ahead and tweak a little bit because they don't want to offend that sanctity of motherhood. And then on top of it, there's a Disney does not like to stick its fingers into anything necessarily clear religious, like something that could just be labeled as, like, this is this religion, and for good reason. But because of that, they try to wipe away a little bit more of those religious themes. But we're gonna keep fucking chopping on because there's so much more that can be said about this Christian version. So basically what happens is the witch has now gained dominion over this baby. She owns the baby. It's hers.
Is the mother aware at all?
The mother is not only aware, it was at the time way more offensive to deny a pregnant woman of her desire than it was to make a promise for absolutely anything hypothetical. The mother was like the literal importance of a household. Now, because you could make more babies, but you couldn't make more mothers as easily. And so that's why they gave the mother that much, like, important. I'm sure it's for other reasons too, because, you know, moms are fucking hot. As somebody who has an eye for mommies, let me just tell you, I get it.
Oh, your mother's lacking.
Malaka, your mother, though, not lacking.
My mother is lacking eyesight. She is blind. But you know what? I will say, as not only her son, her manager, and her life partner, she really needs to get on that stage and start fucking dancing, because I swear to God, the amount of men who would pay money for a woman with no eyes to shake that ass blows my mind. And my mother is not as diehard as Rapunzel's father was. And that's a big issue in my household. But also in my household, the big issue is how Christianity is one of the things, the themes that has, like, propelled us in our decisions on how we behave ourselves. And so for Rapunzel, she grew up in Rome at the time, or I guess St. Barbara, grew up in Rome at the time, father's a merchant, and there was no Christianity around. And so when her father decides to, like, hide the baby, he's like, we need to keep our child from this witch, and they move away. The witch just finds them and goes, you know what? I'm still going to take your child anyways. There's no overbearing God or consequence for stealing this child. Now, I'm not sure that's what she was thinking. I just have to assume. But she goes, there's no God. Who gives a fuck? I'll take anybody's kid. And so they run away. She finds the kid, and she goes, hey, buddy, nice try. It's mine. Now, specifically, and it's, there's certain versions of it that also maintain this part, but specifically in the Grimm's brothers, she blesses the child with immense beauty and this, like, this health and strength, which is the reason why Rapunzel's hair, as she develops into a young lady, can be strong enough to hold the weight of an adult. And it's because this hair is not just regular hair. It's incredibly healthy hair. This is the strongest hair you've ever seen in your fucking life.
So the witch does this.
The witch does this.
To kind of secure her future assets.
Well, I don't know if she knew what she was going to do with Rapunzel, but she knows the moment Rapunzel's hers, she grants her just immense health and immense beauty. And these are two key characteristics that the witch gave her in this version. So now that you have baby Rapunzel, and you can do whatever you want with her, and she's fucking sexy, what do you do with a child like that?
So to comment on this, when you start talking about the hair, right? So we were talking about this earlier, but I do come from a religious background. This immediately, when you talk like the Christianity portion of it, this actually reminds me a lot of Samson.
It seems to be that certain... especially with when it comes to the hair, the eyes, and the nails, I think it was. Hair, eye, and nails. These, because these things are on the surface of your, like, epidermis, mm-hmm. and they're affected by, like, all, everything. They're affected by everything, and even with your eyes being a window to the soul, even though they maintain their health, these people idolize these tiny characteristics. I think it's because they could have been changed.
Yeah, but like with Samson was a part of the Nazarenean covenant, which was like you couldn't cut your hair. And that was like a big thing biblically. So it's like it's interesting when you're bringing up the Christian parallels of Rapunzel, which is has a direct correlation with the character as well in the Bible.
Which arguably, yes, I would think was interesting. However, the only issue is that she wasn't predominantly Christian. In fact, her Christian influence doesn't come until later. So what ends up happening is that Rapunzel, let's jump back into where St. Barbara has been owned by the witch now. So the witch has her. She has immense beauty and immense health. Now that girl becomes 12 years old. So she's in her beginning moments of being a young lady, I guess. So people have their eyes on her. And the witch gets very scared of this. And she goes, well, how do I preserve her youthful beauty? So what she does is she locks Rapunzel up in a tower that has no stairs and no access to a window. I think it was 30 meters in the air, which is the most European shit I've ever heard. I mean, come on, guys. We have inches. We have feet.
Wait, so we're still miles. In the Roman version of this?
Yes, St. Barbara. Okay. St. Barbara. She's up in this tower. And every single version of this, it will always be measured in meters because of the nature of European measurements.
We're coming up on that 30-minute mark for cameras. All good? Okay, cool. I just want to make sure we talked about it. So we were at 30 or 34 minutes of recording right now, by the way.
Cool. Do you have a measurement on this camera?
Yeah. On this camera, we're at 36 minutes and 24 seconds.
So the camera's already switched to the second.
They're both on at the same time.
Yeah, but this one, after 30 minutes, it stops and you have to re-edit. That's
this one. Okay, gotcha.
It's already going.
Gotcha.
It's on the second increment.
Cool.
Sick. That was dope. I didn't even know we were that smooth. All right, let's dive back in. So St. Barbara, she's kept in this tower by this witch. And, oh no, my bad. This is me getting confused with my information. St. Barbara was not put in the tower by the witch. She was promised, but she was not given to it. What ends up happening is the father gets really upset by the immense beauty and the immense, I don't know, allure that she has. The father, in the St. Barbara version, has to go out of town. He has to go on a work trip. So what he does is he hires people to build this tower for Rapunzel so he can keep her locked away because he doesn't trust his daughter, like I guess any father would do. Not because they don't believe their daughter's responsible, but because men know men. And if there's one thing I've learned, as a man in my 25 years of life, men are fucking gross and we are creepy and we have hair and we have sweat and our hair and sweat for some weird reason is way grosser than women's hair and sweat. And this might be purely my own opinion, but I will say there's something about my hair and my sweat that when I taste it and I just fucking eat it, like, damn, this be way better. If I wasn't a man.
Yeah, if you were someone as beautiful as Rapunzel.
Honestly, I think it's unfair because Rapunzel was apparently a fucking babe. And
yeah,
like
the
she
weird
was
part
given
is she's,
that
what, 12 years old at this point in the story?
Hey, well, dude.
But that's
but
babe
on.
For that time.
At that time, that's an adult.
That's babe.
That's an adult.
Yeah. Yeah. It's reasonable if I was living in Rome in 400 or so AD, I might say she's a babe. Today, I would never say that, ever. But then I might have said that.
as the host of the show, I'd like to say on record that I would only wait till Rapunzel was at least 18, and then I would say all of the dirty things I thought about her.
So would I.
Today? If she wanted you to say them too.
No, I mean, even back then, like, I was a good guy back then. Back then, dude, I would wait till at least 35, because you can't take your chances. Oh, you don't know.
She's a wrinkled, shriveled up grandma by 35, dude.
Look, dude, at 25, I'm a wrinkled, shriveled up grandpa. So I'm just saying, game knows game, and I know what kind of fruits that lady has. Point is, Rapunzel is a sweet, sweet peach. That's locked away in a tower, a tree trunk of fucking purity. And because her father's gone, he says, man, you know what? I'm going to get a couple of dudes to look up on her, make sure she's all good. So a couple of dudes come around. They check up on her, making sure she's okay. And they notice she's terribly sad. And they go, how do we make her less sad? So they put these books inside of her, inside of a basket, and then they tie this rope to it, and they string the rope up to her. Now, one of these people happened to put in a book on Jesus Christ, and the Jesus Christ, I guess, influence at the time. I don't know if it was a Bible. They never specified whether it was a Bible or not, but it was a book about Jesus and Christianity. And so this book goes up to Rapunzel, and Rapunzel starts reading it. Now, this is where I think historians might be playing normal emotional themes of the modern day human being into effect with that time, because I don't know what was normal for somebody who was a young girl at the time to be thinking.
You said this was third century?
Third century AD.
Council of Nicaea. The second Council of Nicaea wasn't until 8th century. So this is way before the traditional book of the Bible that we know.
So this was probably closer to like maybe the Jewish iteration, because that was the earlier, right? The Torah is in
Torah. It's an Old Testament. I mean, however you want to put it. So it's probably there were gospels around, but the Second Council of Nicaea was taking all the floating different gospels and books of the Bible and condensing them down to one single book, somewhere in the late 700s.
Okay, so that would have been 8th century. Yeah. So this is post-Rapunzel or St. Barbara's time. So this book was just about, I guess, Jesus, maybe. It was just purely about Jesus, because she starts to claim after this that Jesus is Lord. And the reason why she dives into this so deeply as historians figure is because, one, she had severe daddy issues, because her father was controlling her entire life. Two, she was isolated in a tower for physical attributes that she couldn't control, which added a lot more confusion, because it's like, how do I make myself less hot so that I can live a normal life?
It's a tough question to ask a 12-year-old.
It's a tough question to ask a 25-year-old Instagram model, frankly. And so to ask somebody who doesn't even know what male attention is like is even more difficult. So she's locked away in this tower. She's feeling all sorts of isolated. And then she hears about this one guy who loves you throughout time and space. Everywhere you are, he's with you, and he loves you. And she gravitates toward that heavily. And she goes, this is what I need to dedicate my life to. So now she's lost into the ether of Christianity. And in that moment, in that time in the third century, that was the most rebellious thing that you could do. So historians question whether or not that was an act of defiance toward her father, an act of rebellion towards the status quo, or an escape mechanism for her so that she could find comfort lost in this tower. But as the story goes, she's doing that, and then she instructs the guys who are...
Oh, no. Yeah? So I'm just thinking... Okay. So for the listeners at home, I have a degree in Old Testament theology. It was a lifetime ago. It's something I'm very happy that I got, because there's a lot of history when it comes to the modern day and understanding the Bible and how it's influenced it. So I just Googled it because I wanted to make sure before I brought this up. But everything you're saying about Rapunzel makes perfect sense, right? So we talked about the Second Council of Nicaea, right? Malak was asking for the bottle of Woodford.
Malak is trying not to say it out loud.
Yeah, it's all good. So that's when the full Bible got ratified, but Christianity was still around before that. 4th century Roman Empire emperor was Constantine the Great, which was the first Roman emperor that adopted Christianity.
Yeah, and so the story goes.
So what you're saying is like if there was this like book that with Jesus, and it's all, oh my God.
Yeah.
This is where, oh, my mind just got blown. This is all making so much more sense. It's just, oh, I'm sorry. Did I jump ahead for you?
No, you not only jumped ahead, you actually fell into the same reason why I fell in love with this idea for a show.
Yeah.
Was, wait a minute. Is there a fucking deeper understanding to like literally historical events that actually shaped all of history?
Yeah.
And the way we even believe in things today? And it's like, yeah. Because ultimately what ends up happening is you realize humans are a little bit more feeble than we think. We end up falling into patterns and themes of our ancestors, pretending they're ours, and then repeating history. But history is only repeated, and this is a very difficult concept to understand. History is only repeated 200 years after the history is made, in my opinion. Because up until that moment, was it history or was it a moment in time where anything was possible? Because if it's a moment in time where anything is possible, that means history still could repeat itself, but we don't know where it's going to go. We don't know that it repeated itself until at least 200 years later when we can reflect on it. And so Rapunzel, which I never thought being this like theme, this almost this potential for an influence of Christianity in Rome at the time.
Yeah.
It's a serious issue because now it's like, was Rapunzel more than that? Was she not? Who knows? We'll get
so there. In the Roman one, so to ask that question, in the Roman one, is the savior of Rapunzel meant to be a Jesus figure?
Not at all. In fact, Rapunzel was the theoretical prophet for the savior figure. The savior figure still being the Lord himself. So what ends up happening is that she starts instructing these weird things. Like she asks the guys who are watching her, "Hey, can you go ahead and build some extra windows in here? Can you make it 3 windows from my tower? One to represent the Son, the Holy Ghost, and the Father." So they start doing that. Then her father comes home. And her father sees the tower, sees 3 windows. He's a little bit confused. Goes up into the tower to talk to Rapunzel. And he goes, "Hey, Rapunzel, fucking..." Actually, I don't think they ever decipher how... Which is really weird because like they definitely did 3 windows instead of 2. They definitely built all of this shit, but they never explain how it was built, how they got up that high. They explain how they gave her the books with that little pulley system, but they don't explain if that basket's heavy enough to carry the father either. They just say, like, her father was able to see it and figured it all out. So her father comes home, sees all of that, and is like, "Hey, what the fuck? I leave my daughter alone with you guys for like 2 weeks, and you're telling me you allowed my daughter to convert an entire belief system in 2 fucking weeks? What's going on?" So he's livid. But now he also is having one of the most interesting complications of all time. Do I deal with this as a father or do I deal with this as a civilian? Because I'm a merchant. So my daughter getting deeply enveloped in Christianity reflects poorly on me in the merchant class. And this could ruin my business. Now I'm harboring, as you guys can tell, I'm fucking drunk now, harboring a fugitive in my house. This is my daughter, but this is a literal fugitive.
So it's illegal at this time to be a Christian.
So illegal completely. That it's taboo. It's like, it's the worst thing you could have done.
Sorry, when is this going on? So I'm doing all this research now, and this is why I love this, because I'm like, you are expanding my mind so much. I'm double checking like all this shit right now. Now that you're saying of like my beliefs, of like my background, and okay, so you're saying it's illegal to be a Christian right now?
At the time in Rome, that's the merchant class, so the upper middle class, it was illegal to be a Christian.
Holy shit. Okay. Which makes sense, because then Constantine comes in, and then Constantine becomes the first Roman emperor to become Christian. Then Christianity becomes legalized
and then
in the Holy Roman Empire. And then there's the first Council of Nicaea in 325. The first Council of Nicaea is actually where they brought in the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, that all three were
the Trinity.
Were divine and equal. And that's when the basis of the Bible started. It wasn't the second Council of Nicaea. The second Council of Nicaea is when they did relics. So I apologize. I was wrong when I first said it. But things are even added up more, and this is fucking weird, man.
Isn't it super holy weird? Holy shit. It's because what it's telling you right now is like, and this is honestly one of the best episodes to do for the first episode because of my Christian background as well, or at least my heavily specifically Christian background and background in theology. But I didn't know that these folklores expanded out to religious themes. I didn't know they could have one. I thought they were written out of like a stressor that didn't come from religion, a stressor more of the time. I thought it was a revolt against religion, mm-hmm. but it turns out there might be, and this might be a question that we might have to answer throughout the entirety of this show. Where does a religious writing begin in a fairy tale slash folklore slash parable begin?
Dude, if you want to have, because that's my Old Testament. So my first degree is in philosophy and folklore and mythology. My second degree is in Old Testament theology. If you want to have like just a one-off episode of fairy tales where we just actually talk about like the Old Testament and that aspect, I will 100% come on that episode and talk about the parallels of the Old Testament and every other major old world religion and how like it coincides and how it's all folklore, fairy tale, and mythology.
Do you listen to Alan Watts?
I know the name. Why do I know that name?
Alan Watts is a philosopher who came from a Christian specific background.
Oh yeah. Why can't I think of it? Yes.
Yes.
Sorry.
The answer is yes.
Couple cocktails.
And on top of it, he also becomes a mumbling drunk.
Yeah.
But he still maintains his composure, and he's one of my favorite theologians. And he kind of inspired me to like get deeper into this realm. But yes, there is a whole rabbit hole that can be opened up wide. Now tread carefully, because at the same time,
100%. Yeah.
And this is the interesting issue: is for some people who recognize Rapunzel as an archetype of religious understanding, is this a fairy tale to them? Are we degrading their belief system by calling it one? Yeah. I don't know.
No, her name was Saint Barbara, no? You said in the Roman
Her name telling? Was Barbara. It becomes Parsley later. Or I mean,
was Rapunzel. She given sainthood?
So
at some point?
As the story goes.
Yeah, we're at 52 minutes, by the way.
We're going to have to fucking chop ahead. Dude,
but this is what's great about Pilot, and you can leave this in if you want. I know you're editing, but like this could be easily every single one needs a two-part episode where it's like episode one is like this, episode two is that.
I'm not actually opposed to the idea of possibly like transpiring a second part to this episode if we get there to that point.
Yeah.
Because I do think there's a lot to uncover. I'm going to try my best to at least finish this first iteration of St. Barbara, so we can kind of understand why there's a religious theme and background.
Yeah, no, sorry, keep going. Scene. Yes, I'm so intrigued right now. I have two computers in front of me and my phone, and every single one has different screens on right now. And it's not fact-checking you. It's just like, holy shit, what is going on?
Yeah,
it's
piece blowing by my piece, mind. Putting things together.
Julian has watched me at our food truck have my phone and laptop out, and I'm dude, we don't have the time. I can tell you right now, we don't. But there is a potential possibility that an old Persian story called Zal and Rubidah might even translate a little bit more of the understanding of the long hair issue, because the long hair actually wasn't specified in St. Barbara. It was added on, but it was never an original part of that St. Barbara. All that was originally there was that she was locked in the tower, and the tower's inaccessible. So she's in this tower. Her father hears about all of this. He's freaking the fuck out, because he's like, dude, I gotta sell shit, and now all of a sudden you're a fucking Christian, and they don't like Christians here, and I don't even give a shit about theology, but like, god damn it, I need to sell stuff. And he said god damn it, not me, that was me quoting him, like, yeah, I'm good. And so essentially what happens is her father starts feeling like he's harboring a fugitive, and he doesn't know what to do, but he knows that ultimately his responsibility as a citizen to Rome is to turn in a criminal.
This is interesting. So, okay, talking about Rapunzel, then bringing up the Christianity, and then the Zal and Rubidah. I'm just looking up at this. This is very – so never made this connection, but – so talk Rapunzel to Zal and Rubidah, Romeo and Juliet.
Which is the ultimate – two people, the star-crossed lovers.
Yeah.
Who have to overcome that trial. So what you will find out with these fairy tales is that they all transcend into another fairy tale.
So
all of these stories are stolen. So remember when we were talking about Pidocchio and the Cherry Frog Bride earlier?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now you know where the frog princess comes from. which is a big issue. That's why they changed it to Cherry to the Frog Bride, is because they maintained the theme of the whim, the, in that version, the young girl, the protagonist, Rapunzel, she's the one who desires the parsley. So her mother goes and steals it for her and gives it to her. And then the there's a nunnery, and the abbess of the nunnery is upset that there's this stealing going on. And then these three princes from the same king come to this nunnery, see that girl. And because she's blessed with immense beauty and all of that stuff, they become wholly obsessed with her. And so they want her so bad. It causes a commotion. The abbess uses, I guess, religious magic to turn Rapunzel into a frog. Now you have a whole other subsect of another fairy tale that we could dive into deeper. But, like, again, let's dial it back in so we can figure out what happens with Dioscorus and his damn daughter, who's a fucking dime piece. So this girl, she gets in trouble with her father, in trouble with the law. So the dad goes, you know what? I got to take you in. So he takes her into jail. And now the courts are like, God, what are we going to do with this girl? So they put her on trial. And they go, you've been known to be believing in Jesus. And that shit don't fly. Because we're people who believe in a God for everything.
Yeah.
Not one God for everything.
So is it her father who's putting her, like, who basically gives her in, turns her into the local judges or whatever it might be?
Yes, and it's the pressure, the social pressure of him being a merchant that puts her in there. So he takes her in there, he puts her into jail, the courts question her, and her answer, which again, this is my favorite, this is the reason why I would be religious, is because her answer, she looks this entire panel in the eye, and they ask her, is it true that you've been doing this, 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 and this? And she says, I only answer to the Lord Jesus Christ. And they go, burn that bitch. And so they immediately are like, fuck this bitch. She's fucking, obviously she fucking believes in Jesus. Listen to what she said. So they torture her, and they put her in this, like, it's almost like reminiscent of the Jesus Christ trial, but they torture her. Also
Joan of Arc.
Not only Joan of Arc.
Exactly like Joan of Arc.
Who was that one philosopher? Was it Plato or was it Socrates?
Is it Socrates,
the trial that he has to go through?
The trial of Socrates. He makes them murder him, basically, because he's unwilling to let go of his pride.
Yeah, yes, but really, if we're going to put it in a nicer tone, he's unwilling to let the sheep be the shepherd. And the shepherd dog himself.
But it makes sense because, like, we talked about it, where it's like at this point, depending on when it was, Christianity could have been legal by Constantine. But just because the emperor made it legal doesn't mean every single city's going to abide by it.
No, and not only that, there's an argument that the emperor made it legal after, actually. That this story, this idea of St. Barbara is what pushed for the legality of it. So, okay, I'm getting ahead of myself. So she's on trial. They torture her. And then the finishing blow. Is her father pulling out his sword and cutting off her head in the St. Barbara edition. He cuts off her head.
Okay.
And he kills her. Now, the reason why, which Julian asks, does she get elevated to sainthood? Well, there was a few problems with that. To be a saint, you had to perform some sort of miracle. And that was the only way you could be granted that, like, sainthood.
Mm-hmm.
So what the argument is, while Barbara was canonized amongst everybody at the time, she didn't necessarily fill those standards. So I don't know if they added these details in later or if they were always added in and then they started to perceive them as miracles. But a few things happened. So one of them was in the magical Christian version of this, Barbara. When her father first comes back and is chasing her around the tower, she flies around. Like, she literally flies. She lifts off the ground, which is, like, kind of interesting. Yeah. Because if she could fly the whole time, why didn't she fly off the building? Yeah, but I don't fucking know.
That's not the concern at the time. The concern is her love for Jesus, maybe, is what allowed her to fly.
Yo, dude, I love Jesus a lot, but if I could fly, I would fly and love Jesus a lot. I wouldn't pick one or the other.
So talking about sainthood, though, this is interesting because miracles are a part of it. But
you okay?
Martyrdom.
So that was what I originally thought, because she was always declared a martyr for the cause. But it was a human death, is what they argued, and there was no like miraculous effort. So if you just had a martyr's death that was natural, what you were was just recognized as a human who believed that highly, but you weren't elevated to sainthood.
Interesting. Okay, because my thing is with the death. Okay, I'm not a dad, but if I was a dad and I had a daughter and the daughter had to die and I was like, I had to watch it, I would do it myself and cut off her head, because that's probably the easiest, least painful way to do it. So like, I'm looking at that perspective that her dad killed her out of, I didn't want her tortured.
Yeah, but that's not a miracle. That's still human nature. Yeah, but I'm human saying,
but isn't martyrdom? Martyrdom, there we go.
Yeah, it's martyrdom, but it's not considered a miracle. It's considered human still.
I was under the impression that martyrdom and miracle, it's one or the other. Does it? Even if you don't perform a miracle in life, if your life is in a martyrdom.
No, not true. But you could be a martyrdom and a miracle, if you're a miracle, you usually have martyrdom. But martyrdom itself isn't the miracle. So what they said was the miracle was, one, when her father tried to kill her, she flew around. Two, they added this all later. This is not in the story. But when they were torturing her, a cloud veiled her as a protection from the actual pain. So she was still being attacked, but she didn't feel the pain of it. And then the third thing that they added on there was, after her father cut her head off, he was struck by lightning and murdered by God himself, the Lord.
So this is, at the end of the day, this is a Christian story.
Theoretically, this became one, because at the when it gets to that point, now Barbara has been elevated to sainthood. Now it's Saint Barbara who introduced the revolution of Christianity into a Roman upper middle class understanding, because I'm sure there was like some kind of religious talk amongst the peasants, because that's what poor people do, is they try to find an existential understanding because it makes everything easier. But for upper middle class, that wasn't present. And the merchants just act out of lust. That's not true, but they act out of carnal desires theoretically, because their entire understanding is that. Yeah. And St. Barbara was the first time.
They live in the world of commerce and finance, so there's no need for God to quell the kind of painful realities of life.
Not when your existence is tangible.
Yeah.
And everything you know is tangible, yeah. Huh. And so she transcended that, and then she receives that blessing of sainthood. And so now she is not only the martyr for Christianity, but the example of the – because that's the other thing. That's the thing about Jesus, which I thought was interesting about this story, is Jesus also has his revival. Most of the prophets that are that big have their comeback from death. That's the last like obstacle that they have to achieve, is to come, not prophets in that theoretical sense, but like people of a religious importance in that way, the ones that are blessed by God, the ones that can overcome death, now become this channel to God that is forever. There is no death. She escaped death. She basically Harry Pottered her way out of that. And that was pretty fucking dope on her part. Now, that is why at that time, people found something. Like, it wasn't about the thievery. It wasn't about the need for grains. It was about her diehard affinity for Jesus and God in a way that had never been seen before in that area.
Is there any discussion of the one of the gentlemen who gave her this book?
No, not only that, he's not brought up. He doesn't have a name. It doesn't say the book.
It's just divine manifestation that this book arrived with her.
Not necessarily. It's more like, and I think that religion wants this to be larger than it is. Because I think we skip past it. We just give it up to the divine, and it's very easy to make mockery of the divine. So religion goes out of its way to put tangible pieces that can add to it. So it's not like, oh, this book magically appeared. No, there was clearly a person there.
There was a North Star.
There was a North Star. There's always that leader who just kind of connects the dots. And he's not important for any other reason other than a connection of the dots. Now that we know that St. Barbara was a religious icon.
We are at the 1 hour mark, question, by the way.
The true question is, how does this tie into a non-religious, hair-based fairy tale? How do we get to that point? To the iconic Rapunzel, Rapunzel, let down your long hair. It's a good question. And that question will be answered on the second installment of Fairly Odd Fairy Tales. And if you ever wanted a cliffhanger, well, baby, you got one.